And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the Hagman and Hagman Report on this Tuesday edition. Every Tuesday in our second hour, we're joined by the one and only Mr. Stan Deo. Go to his website at standeo.com and go to the show images link on the under the microphone on the right-hand side to see the latest show images that we will be talking about tonight on the show.
I'm there. Hey, Stan, how you doing?
Oh, good, guys, good. How are you? I take it you guys have probably had a few conversations about Planet X, haven't you?
We've had callers with a lot of questions about that, And we've talked briefly
and
with a few people.
And what seems to be the... Say again?
And we've talked... A few guests have talked about it here and there with the mention. The overall question from the audience seems to be, what is Planet X? Is it real? And is it something that we need to watch out for? And I see you have a lot of information here on your site.
Yeah, I've been kicking it around, trying to figure out how this Planet X could affect the Earth without coming right past it. And I think part of the error that we've made, all of us, in listening to, say, like Zechariah Sitchin and stuff, was that that Planet X came so close to Earth that they could just hop across, you know, to Earth, you know, every 3,600 years or whatever it is, and visit us. But therein lies a problem. As I show on the top row right-hand picture, or the, you know, the third picture on that row, about Planetary X orbital type, if you click on that, you'll see a diagram of the two different ways you can look at the orbit of such a planet around our sun. Now, the equations that I ran originally was trying to get the Planet X as close to Earth as I could using an orbital method that best fits comets. They're, you know, like Halley's Comet, stuff like that. They have an elliptical orbit that comes down and swings around the sun real close and then back out into the Kuiper Belt or wherever they come from out there, usually the Kuiper Belt. Now, that's a roughly... 30 to 50 times the distance from Earth that Earth is from this, the sun. It's called an astronomical unit, an AU. Anyway, a comet behaves like that. But if we're talking about a planetary body that assumes a typical planetary orbit around the sun, it will never come so close to the sun that it would graze it. Well, unless something kicked it out of its orbit. So in the diagrams I've got up here, I show a planetary-style orbit around the sun, where the a planet like the Earth or Saturn or Jupiter, they go around the Earth either in an almost circular path or an egg-shaped elliptical path. Now, that's a planetary-style orbit, which, you know, has kind of, if you take the average of its closest distance to its farthest distance from the sun, in the case of Planet X, that would be somewhere around 250 to 270 AUs, or 250 to 270 times the distance of the Earth from the sun. But underneath that, I show the cometary-style orbit, which swings around, and that would be, you know, I did the calculations using that assumption the first time I did my calculations, you know, last year, year before. And I figured that we would see Planet X within 2 or 3 years, it was going to be close to the sun on this 3,600-year orbit. But if you go to the planetary-style orbit, then it changes things. Every 1,800 years, this planet will be on one side of the sun or the other, and it will interact, it will cross through, possibly, the outer reach. Well, it's way beyond the Kuiper Belt. It's about... its close point's about three times the distance of the Kuiper Belt from the sun. Say at about 143 times the distance of the Earth from the sun. And its furthest point's 340 AUs. Now, what I'm telling all this for is somewhere out there beyond 143 times the distance of the Earth from the sun, if Planet X is out there with this 3,600-year orbit, then one side of its orbit, where it's close to the sun, may pass through a region of the space around the sun that is different to the other side of the sun. When I say different, I mean like different collections of floating bits and pieces out there in the what's called the Oort cloud. Now, if you want to see what I'm talking about, go to the first diagram on the line, which is a graph I've made showing, say, from Neptune to Pluto to the Kuiper Belt to the 10th planet that some of the scientists have suggested, to planet X that I suggest, et cetera, showing how far away from the Sun these places are, these orbits or clouds. Now, when you see the planet X thing, it's between 194, which is, you know, and 270 on my graph, but it's really between 250 and 270. You just can't see that 250 marker there for planet X. The Oort cloud it starts at about, say, 2,000 or say 1,944 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. So between the Kuiper Belt and the start of the Oort cloud, there must be something. It's not just empty space. If you go down to the second line into the middle picture, it says Oort cloud, and it shows the limits of it from 1,944 to 52,200 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. And you'll see a little bitty blue rectangle way down in there. And that little blue rectangle blown up shows you it. That's the Kuiper Belt. And if you look at this, now this has been plotted by NASA and various other organizations in astronomy to approximate the distribution of objects around our Sun all the way out to the edge of the Oort cloud and just a little bit beyond that to the edge of the definition, if you wish, the outer limits of our Sun's field. It's what they call it, the heliopause, where the edge of the Sun's influence hits space and forms a little boundary. But this is down inside that at the Oort cloud, what we're talking about here. And you can see all these little dots of mass. And you can see that down there where the Kuiper Belt is and going all the way out to the outermost limits of the Oort cloud, there's a distribution of mass out there that's kind of out there but not totally identified or anything by us here on Earth. So there's all kinds of masses out there, and that region out there from the little Kuiper Belt, that little blue rectangle, out to the edge of the Oort cloud, somewhere in there, if Planet X is orbiting, it will hit clusters of mass when it's closest to the Sun on one side, and it may miss them on the other side because there won't be anything in that part of the Oort cloud. It's a random distribution. What I'm saying this for is this. If we have a 3,600-year period to catastrophes linked to this Planet X-type, event, to Nibiru or whatever you want to call it, it might be that we are approaching a time where that Planet X has disrupted some mass out there in the 143 AU limit and has caused it to perturb the orbits of Neptune and Pluto and Uranus. We know that they're being perturbed by at least one large mass. And recently, of course, the scientific community has decided that there may be two new discoveries out there, two new extreme, what they call extreme trans-Neptunian objects, ETNOs. And these two, they predicted that these two planets out there would be somewhere in the range of 150 to 525 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. Well, my figures show that the close point would be 143 AUs, which is very, very close to the minimum distance they show for these ETNOs, the 13 of them they found, but the two large ones. And the two large ones, they say, would lie about 200 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. There's another one at 250 as well. Now, when you look at this, I've got equations that are up on my show images page. I'm just trying to see where I've done that here. Let's see. Show images and go back. Okay. Oort cloud. You can get to the article, I think, there. No, that's just the thing. sorry. Just give me a second here. I'm trying to find out where I put this.
No problem.
Okay. I don't think I've got the graph that will show you what I want to there. I'm just going to have to tell you. I don't want to bore you with totally all equations and numbers, but long ago, years ago, I started figuring out, you know, where this mysterious Planet X perturbation thing might be in our solar system by using standard astronomical, very long and complicated equations to plot where every planet should be. And the accuracy of the equation I use is pretty astounding. The second picture on the top row of my show images page is showing how close the Deo formula, which is the red line, comes to what is actual versus what the Titus Bode formula was. And there have been people that used simple mathematics, to say where the orbits of our planets should be. And they assumed that there would be no missing planets in between the ones that we know about, or they haven't been broken up, or they're not there, or whatever. But I took a different approach and said, let's find the equation that best fits all the planets, even if it generates a couple of empty orbits, which you'll see there in that graph shows as empty. And that equation almost perfectly fits the known positions of our planets. And the formula is up there for those of you that want to dive into a little bit of algebra and graphics. You'll see that up at the top of the page.
Yeah, sign me up for that, Stan. Sorry. Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
Figured a bite. Well, this is important because I use something like this to go out there and start predicting orbits where the Planet X might be, where it would be a stable orbit for it. And that's how I arrived at a figure of 270 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun, maximum, and minimum 234. If you average those out, I'd say that planet would be at around 252 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun. And that is, you know, within 2 AUs of what the article says, that they think that that's where the big planet, the 10 times more massive than Earth, might be, at 250 AU. So that article is at space.com. I don't know if I've got a link to that. Let me just see if I put a link up there. No, don't have it. But anyway, if you'll go to let's see here, to space.com, and then look for article on Planet X worlds beyond Pluto. And I can tell you that if you go to space.com and then a slash, type in 28284, then a dash, and the word planet, then a dash, then an X, then a dash, then worlds. In fact, guys, let me, I forgot I could do this. Let me give this to Joe in the, in the Skype messaging. And you can share that in the room.
Okay.
Because this article just absolutely underscores what I've been telling people for several years now from my own calculations. Here it comes. Now you can share that with folks there. And for those that were listening, it's, you know, after the X, it's dash worlds, W-O-R-L-D-S. Dash beyond dash Pluto dot HTML. Anyway, that's an extremely good article and very relevant to what I've been trying to explain here about this Planet X. Now, Planet X, if it's only 143 times the distance of Earth from the Sun, 143 AUs, it can disturb things out there, 100 years ago that are just now going to find their way into perturbing the asteroid belt or, the Sun itself. So it doesn't have to come within visual range or its closest point to actually set in motion events with other objects that it encounters out there to cause changes in the inner solar system, the inner planets, and the Sun itself. That means that it may be at its closest now, it may be approaching that, it may have done something 500 years ago that's going to be making results occur now. So we measure the presence of this Planet X thing by events. But if you go on Zachariah Sitchin's translations and others who said that, you know, every 3,600 years this this planet comes close enough, the beings can hop off over to Earth, and that kind of stuff. We can't just limit it and say, look, they have to be within, you know, a few million miles of Earth. They could be out there 143 times the distance of the Earth from the Sun, and with their own space drives, they could hop over here, and it would take them half as long as it normally would at the furthest most point from the Sun. So, you know, there are a lot of variables here that we don't have, you know, hard data on in the community, scientific community, to tell where that mysterious body is. We know that it does affect the outer large planets, Neptune and Uranus, and Pluto is really kind of probably a moon that spun off of Neptune anyway. But so we know this, and I say to people, if you're looking for Planet X, okay, that's fine. Look more for perturbations of things close to us in the asteroid belt, or, you know, between there and Neptune. Objects in that area would be more likely to do us damage in the next 7 to 10 years or so. These things way out there have long-term effects. So we should be looking for objects of a number of sizes that may be a result of that and would fulfill prophecy in like the book of Revelation of John, where he talks about a star, a bright burning object, falling into the seas and killing a third of the sea life, and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Anyway, I just wanted to bring this information to people's attention to say that we're not ignoring, you know, Holly and I and those of us who work together looking at this kind of stuff on Planet X, we're not ignoring the various discussions on it in the non-professional blog talks and all kind of stuff, and, you know, Facebook discussions and things like that. What we're trying to do is add these factors in to, well, stabilize the discussion and try to get more towards fact than supposition and kind of one man's translation of the Sumerian articles or the Aztec calendar in its relation to that as well. So anyway, that's all I want to do, was to bring that to people's attention so that we don't get totally carried away with looking for a big planet to suddenly appear, you know, on the horizon in the southern hemisphere or the northern hemisphere or whatever. I don't think it's going to come itself that close, but its effects may.
Interesting. And for the okay, that sounds great. And for the listeners who did not catch that space.com article link, or those people not involved in the chat room, folks, you can go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the, or look on the right-hand side, right underneath Stan Deo's show images link, and there's a link directly to that article Stan referenced. So make it easy on yourself. Go to HagmanHagman.com, click on the link for the space.com weather article, and of course the link to Stan's site is right above that. All right, my friend. Wow, interesting indeed.
Absolutely. There's another thing too, you know, this big asteroid that it was what, three times the distance of the moon from us, passed us the other day. Asteroid, yeah. 2004, yeah. Well, I did get a picture off of a video they took of the passage of this thing, and apparently it has its own moon. It's only
that.
A few hundred meters. Yeah, isn't that incredible? I put that up on the show images page because the solar system, well, the universe for that matter, but the solar system we live in is full of surprises, and it's kind of neat to see that an asteroid has its own moon, even when it's that small, orbiting it. Anyway, just a minor thing of interest. And it related, I was looking for something else that I wanted to talk to you guys about, but the increase in volcanic activity around the planet, I think you're probably aware of that, yes?
Yeah, I haven't noticed that's not something I really pay attention to, but I have seen different parts of the country or parts of the world having new issues with old volcanoes or old hotspots. They're flaring back up.
Well, again, the reason I mentioned that is that, let me see if I've got a link to that article. I do. If you go down to the third row, first picture, you'll see what looks like red fingers going across the top of a molten lava coming up out of Kilauea in Hawaii. But if you click on the bottom, I think it's the bottom of that picture where it's got the text, increased volcanic eruptions in Hawaii, it will take you to an article about, is it volcano season? Now, this article came out in September, late September 2014, but it is important now that we see the number of increasing volcanic activity around the planet, like Iceland, which is really a ripper. It is saying that this occurs when the Earth's spin rate is changed. You can read the whole article, but so what we're seeing here is that the spin rate, the length of the day, things that change or speed up the Earth's spin, affects volcanic activity. And so you say to yourself, well, what's causing this? I think this fits in with the hypothesis I've been putting forward, as have others, about the Earth going through a period of expansion, maybe in discrete, levels or quantum leaps, but they may also be slow expansions at this point in time where we are. But these things indicate a change in the surface of the Earth, either due to spin or the stress of changing of the spin rate around our axis. I know that all sounds like gobbledygook, but at any rate, in that article, it is important to look at that. Let me just see if I see the study was first done in 2009. Just want to find where I'd mark this. Okay, the link between climate change and volcanism is still poorly understood. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, where's that speed thing? It's right there somewhere in the article. I had it marked and lost it. Anyway, if you'll go to that link in the text there under that picture and read through it, you'll see what it's talking about. They measure how many, petajoules, which is a lot of joules of energy, you dissipate in the Earth's rotation. So that's when that changes, it's heralded by an increase in volcanic activity because the surface of the Earth is squeezed and stretched more than it is normally when that rotation rate changes. Anyway.
Okay, so it's 120,000 petajoules of energy each year, enough to power the United States for the same length of time. But so are you, just to be clear, altering the spin of the Earth, are you saying that our days would our days be becoming a little bit longer, perhaps, or shorter, that is, because of the increased rotation?
They oscillate between shorter and longer. And if you expand the Earth, we'll get all these sinkholes and everything. If you get it bigger, then it's going to slow it down if it has the same amount of spin energy, which it probably would, within a little bit. And if you shrink the Earth down, then it would spin up, and the Earth, the length of the day would be shorter. So I think we're moving toward a longer day by fractions of a second.
Oh, okay.
But in line with that, Doug, look over at the second row, the last photo on the right, which is one of Greenland's ice sheets. And it's melting lakes that melt and refreeze. They empty and then refreeze. And this particular one here has drained, melted and drained in the ice sheet and then refilled twice in the last 2 years. It's like a sinkhole under the ice. And, you got to keep wondering, is this due to, the stretching of the Earth's surface as it expands? And hence we have more volcanic activity and more sinkholes. It just kind of underlines that there's something not right or not average, shall we say, in the Earth's ecosystem and the climate and the geology of the planet.
Wow. I'm looking at this,
and there's another thing.
Picture. Yeah, I'm looking at this and fascinating. So, okay, we know it's not customary, normal, or we know this is just not exactly right. So, okay.
Yep. Well, now, there's another thing linked to this melting, Arctic or Greenland-type ice mass. The information that I've been collecting, and I'm sure a lot of others have seen it, is that the ice cover at the South Pole is increasing. Yet at the North Pole region, you know, Greenland ends, the ice level is draining, as you know, and then freezing and then draining. It seems to be warmer at the North Pole than it is at the South Pole, relatively speaking. Now, I've talked to you a number of times about the inversion or the flipping of the magnetic poles of the Earth, so that the North Pole magnetic that we have now would flip and become our South Pole and vice versa. What I've discussed is saying, look, if the Earth's magnetic field, when it flips, is does like the Sun's, then we have a north-south pair, magnetic field in the northern hemisphere, and a south-north pair in the southern hemisphere. And one hemisphere may flip its magnet, if you wish, flip the pole before, say, the South Pole does. In the Sun, we know that that happens where, as the Sun's poles start to flip every about 11 years, the northern hemisphere of the Sun, which is normally north, would flip to south. And you'd think, the southern hemisphere will slip to north, flip to north. But it doesn't. For a while, several weeks, it will sit there, and you'll have two south poles on the Sun, one at the top, one at the bottom, until the bottom half catches up and flips and becomes north. Now, that same thing can happen on Earth. And we know from, images that were released last year by NASA about the detailed imaging of the Earth's magnetic field that they got from satellite data, it shows two north poles and two south poles inside the Earth. And at that time, they were only separated probably by 15 degrees, 20 degrees, something like that. But as that progresses, it causes the electric fields inside the Earth to change as well. And we know from, I think it's called the Thomson effect, that if you have a copper wire and you put a current through it, say from a battery, that it will actually move heat from one end of that wire to the other. So if you had a flame on one end of the wire, the electric current would actually move that flame, the energy of it, down to the other end of the wire and heat it up. But if you go one further to what's called the Peltier effect, where you have, say, copper and nickel touching each other and form what's called a thermocouple junction, you can heat that junction by running electricity through it one way and cool that junction by running electricity backwards through it. Look at the Earth. If we have direct currents, which we do inside the Earth as the northern hemisphere spin, what happens is as the electricity that goes through the Earth and up into the ionosphere, as the electricity flows from, say, the South Pole around the planet to the North Pole, it takes heat away from the South Pole and adds it to the North Pole and heats it up, which might explain why we have a hotter North Pole and a cooler South Pole at the moment, because of this transfer of heat energy by the electric flow in the Earth as this magnetic field inversion progresses. Anyway, just one of Stanley's wild theories, hypotheses, I guess. So,
Interesting. Wow. Man, I no one can say that you're not a fountain of information tonight. My goodness. Okay. Wow. Where do we go from here?
I don't know. We can talk politics in the Middle East if you want.
Let's do so. I take it something's on your mind.
I see that Arab lawmakers are talking about a historic union in the Arab countries of the Middle East. We see Netanyahu and the rhetoric of him coming to the United States to speak in front of Congress and the treatment from the administration and some of the pundits and media pundits on both sides. Pretty hostile.
You did see. It's just been released here four hours ago, I'll just read you from the article. I just couldn't believe my eyes, but it does make sense. In Tel Aviv, I think WorldNet Daily has it, but it's from a Tel Aviv news source. A consulting firm almost entirely composed of former staffers of President Obama's reelection campaign has been hired to run an election effort in Israel aimed at defeating Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. Now, Obama is stepping in and trying to get rid of Netanyahu. There cannot be any question about our administration over here in the White House being an enemy to Israel. Netanyahu is a conservative influence over there, and whether you like him or love him or whatever, or hate him, the point is to change the government now when they're in the middle of a potential attack from Iran is madness. This is another example of Obama trying to hurt Israel, not only to not help them, but to actively create a problem over there and move them toward the very left-leaning, you know, conservative, limp-wristed side of the political stream over there, so that, you know, they can't get together then and fight a common foe like Iran. The use of a preemptive strike just wouldn't be on that left-wing agenda there. But this is where Obama and his former staffers of his re-election campaign are headed. And they definitely wouldn't be doing this without the support of the administration. You can bet on it. I just, you know, this is prophecy 101 right here. I mean, we're seeing people go against Israel, and the United States doing it just makes my hair stand on the back of my neck. I can't believe I'm witnessing this, that we're turning against Israel as a nation. Anyway, Joe, you said something about a consortium being formed. What news stories did you see on that?
I'll throw this in your Skype. This is from a news story that was on Drudge just a little bit ago. Israel's Arab political parties are banding together under one ticket for the first time ever ahead of the national elections in March, hoping to boost a turnout and help unseat Prime Minister Netanyahu. It goes on to say the result is an awkward political marriage of communists, Pakistani nationalists, religious Muslims, feminists, and one Jewish man or one Jewish person.
When we toss in homosexuals and pro-abortionists, and we'd have ourselves a party.
It goes on to say we will be a central player in politics like never before. They say.
Well, that ties in what I was just saying about Obama's election guys coming over there, and they're supporting the Arab position to try to unseat Netanyahu. That's incredible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wonder how much United States money is going behind the back doors to help fund and support these people.
I don't know, but that just makes my blood boil. Goodness gracious.
Well,
I'll tell you what, if we're not...
I mean, this is playing into prophecy, as you mentioned here. Where do you see Iran's nuclear program at? I suppose, you know, we're not getting the truth about Iran with respect to their progress on the nuclear, not just the nuclear ambitions, but their delivery systems as well. Where are we at with that?
Well, you know, basically any good intelligence we get on that comes from what the current administration under Netanyahu in Israel tell us. And they're not going to tell us everything because, you know, it's in defense, they're going to make a surprise move which will mitigate the situation of Iran dropping a nuke on them. And we're already past the red line in that little fuse diagram that Netanyahu did in the United Nations last year.
Right.
Saying, you know, when we get to this point, this time, Iran will have what they need to attack us. So I'm telling you now, they have no choice in Israel. If they want to stay a country and stay alive, they're going to have to preemptively strike Iran, who is openly stating they want to wipe Israel off the map and get rid of every Jew. And even though, Iran at a top level has made peace overtures to Hasidic Jews in New York, saying, okay, we know that you're friends of ours, you're not like the Zionist Jews that are running the country of Israel, blah, blah, blah. The stated objective is going to hit Israelites no matter what, whether they're Zionist or whether they're Hasidic, you know, whatever.
Or if they're Christians.
This has to be.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. But I don't know that Iran say they want to kill all the Christians, but certainly they're going after the Jews, which will hit Christians and Buddhists and Seventh-day Adventists and Mormons and
right.
whoever else has got, you know, people there in Israel. But gosh,
I'm stuttering because I don't even know. First of all, how can we how can this be justified? Stan, going back to what you said about the people going over to Israel, wouldn't this be a violation of federal law? Correct me if I'm wrong, the Logan Act, or maybe I'm wrong in that that particular law.
Well, it's not an official. It's not an official like White House directive as an act of the United States. It's by former staff members, i.e., civilians, who have gone over, been hired to do their public relations stuff that they do to elect presidents, to go over there to unelect Netanyahu in the fair elections to be held there. They're entitled to do that. I mean, they get paid a fee. They go over and do a job, and it's not acting on behalf of the United States, in kind of air quotes, but it is. So they can get away with that. It's not an official act.
Man. And I apologize for the academic nature of this question, but do Americans understand what's going on here? I mean, where's the outrage?
I don't know. Well, I guess they're just missing the fine points. If CBS or CNN or ABC or even Fox, for that matter, if they don't tell the people this, if they don't bring it to their attention right in front of their face, they're not going to see it, because a lot of people work and have other problems they have to deal with in life just to survive. And they're not like those of us that are gathering news for them. And so it is our responsibility to wake up our fellow people who are interested in even knowing the truth and preparing for what's going to happen because of it. So it falls on our shoulders to say, look, we've digested the news this week, and boy, you better pay attention to this. It's going to affect you personally, and a lot of other people for that matter. But that's why they're not waking up, and there are not enough of us going out there and saying at work or at parties or whatever, look, come over here, I got to tell you something. Things are really getting interesting in the world events, and you better pay attention.
How much influence do you think Valerie Jarrett has in that particular initiative to unseat or to make sure that Benjamin Netanyahu does not get reelected? I mean, it's got to be pretty obviously it's pretty severe, pretty heavy. What am I saying? What am I asking this for? That was kind of an
I don't know
question.
Because I can't answer the question.
Yeah, I mean, really? I mean, I can't even believe I asked that question, Stan. Sorry about that. Oh, man.
Have another drink of coffee there.
Yeah, I guess. Double espresso here.
We have a question from Margo about Planet X, Stan, and it's as follows. When does Stan think we will see negative effects of Planet X on Earth? And secondly, do you agree with Bob Fletcher regarding possible earliest of March 20th?
Effects of Planet X, you mean? Is that
yes.
What she's saying?
Yeah. Says on the 20th, and when do you see the possibility of things affecting Earth?
Well, I don't know how Bob Fletcher determined that. Maybe he's done a bit more study than I have. I don't know. I didn't have access to data I don't have. As I said, I don't think we're going to actually be able to see Planet X out there without telescopes punching way out there. The largest it could be would be about 10 times the size of Earth, and it's so far away, we may not even be able to get visible light from it, which means that it'll be like infrared telescopes that are so expensive, probably only the government or the Vatican would have access to them. So I don't know how we would pick
matter?
March 20th date. Well, I don't think so. I think it'll be just normal matter, but it won't be emitting enough light being that far from the sun. We depend on visible light and infrared spectra to locate most of these things. And the further out it gets, the harder it is for us to, as astronomers, to find out where it might be and look for it. If there's not enough light, then our digital telescopes that map the skies out there, even if they knew where it was, might not be able to pick it up. We need something that operates in the infrared spectrum.
Okay, Stan, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't historically, according to ancient historical records. Wasn't Planet X or Nibiru visually seen by people on Earth, or is that just mythology and wrong information?
Well, you know, where did we get that? From Zechariah Sitchin's writings?
Yeah, you know what? I'm not even sure. I'm just babbling. I'm not sure.
I think...
Where?
I think primarily that's where we did get it. And there are only about 15 or 16 people at that point in time who could interpret, translate the Sumerian stuff that he was reading to get this. So did he make a mistake? Is his method of translation foolproof? It's not foolproof. We know that just from experience in other languages that have been translated after they're long gone and not in use, especially in the linear text, linear A and B, and in the pictographic language that became, you know, like Hebrew or, you know, Phoenician, things like that. So let me just look up here, Sitchin and Nibiru on our handy. Right, okay. Let's see. Okay. He used cuneiform, which is one step up from a linear type, the early linear type stuff that had just straight lines in the text, and he went to the cuneiform, which is done with a wedge, a pointy wedge, which is really a derivative of linear methods. And he did translate these things. And so did he make a mistake about whether they saw it or whether they saw the effects of it? A planet the size of the Earth, even getting even into the Earth's orbit, not even touching or not even close, would still upset the Earth and its orbit around the sun. It would probably move our orbit further out because of the extra mass in our orbital section where planets have to orbit would make the orbit unstable. But I don't know.
So really, we're kind of flying blind on this, and we're the people who are, just so I understand this correctly, or at least as best that I can, with a good degree of accuracy, the historical accounts of Planet X are based really on one man's interpretation, one man's translation, or perhaps maybe two or three, but a very limited number of people reading ancient texts that we have little understanding of in the aggregate. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. I don't know how many other people could have done. There was only about 16 who could translate that at that time. I don't know how many now, but I did see conflicting views in the papers on this, the Sumerian cuneiform they were talking about there. I did see conflicting interpretations or translations to Sitchin by other professionals in the field as well. So, you know, you could make an argument that they're covering it up or something like that, but being fair about it, these quote-unquote experts are in disagreement about a lot of what Sitchin has popularized. So I don't know the truth of it. That's what we've got to go with. It's uncertain.
Okay. Wow.
In the 10, 12 minutes we have left, Stan, if we can talk a little bit about this storm yesterday, winter storm Juno, and the, I don't know how much you saw in the news, but it was the news from CNN to Fox yesterday. Was just constantly about this storm, the travel bans that were implemented by, I think, 8 different governors and states of emergency. Power companies, a few of them, or one of them for sure, shut down the power before the storm got here. Today we see, they say went from historic snow to a snow job, they say. Meteorologist apologizes. They're going to start evaluating the modeling. Did you see, or I mean, this storm looked wrong to me from the beginning. From the, it looked like Sandy in its travel route, but it didn't hook in to the country, thank goodness. And you know, from the winds behind it, and you know, looking at that wind map and other models, NOAA models, this looked like a hurricane, like a winter hurricane. And then you know, it missed New York City, but it still hit a little bit up on the on Long Island and throughout Massachusetts and Connecticut. But the hype that was surrounded by the storm, you would have swore it was going to hit New York City and the areas they said it was going to impact. Did you see any type of – do you think there was any type of weather manipulation involved, or do you think this is just a – I mean, we see these huge new storms that are coming out. They're starting to give the winter storms names. A new term I learned yesterday was that bombogenesis. It had to do with the pressure of the storm and how low it was and how low they expected that pressure to be. Is this normal, or is what we're seeing here normal with this?
No, no, it's not our recent past, like, you know, the history of the United States last 220 years or whatever. It's not our normal in the period of time we've occupied the United States, as far as we know. I do think that not only the United States, but other countries around the planet are experiencing record changes in their weather and climate. I think we're seeing a climate change. The fact that you said it looks like a hurricane is because it was spinning as it exited the coast and it went up in toward Maine. The spin of that and the temperature of it and the fact that it was over land for so long does kind of make me want to coin a new term, you know, a winter landicane. Because it's overland and it's cold and, you know, got terrible weather associated with like that. But over here on the western side of the country and, you know, Wyoming and Montana and Colorado, we're seeing strange warm temperatures. I mean, I was out yesterday pruning some trees in the orchard because it's so nice and wonderful out there, 70 degrees, you know, short sleeve weather. So, to me, it indicates what I have predicted for some time, and so have others, that as we approach the change in our climate associated with the number of things in the sun and with the Earth's attitude or angle towards the sun and with the pole reversals and this kind of stuff, we're going to see extremes of weather. The norms are going to go extreme, where we'll have extreme hot, extreme cold, extreme dry, extreme wet. And extreme winds. I think, what was his name? Zone coast to coast so many times. The remote viewing guy. Major Dames, Ed Dames. He said, even in the way he predicts things that might be happening in the future, whether you put faith in that or not, but he did say that as things progress toward this severe change in climate, that we would see violent winds sweep across, you know, in narrow swaths across the surface of the earth, and these would be like microbursts dropping down out of a clear blue sky even, and will just chop down pine trees, you know, maybe a mile wide swath, as it's done here in the United States. I think up in, gosh, where was it? Was it Maine that it did it? It's been 15, 20 years ago that a microburst did that, but microbursts would become plentiful, and with winds above 150 miles an hour, which, of course, most of our houses are not rated to withstand, so we may see some of that as well as these strange, cold, weird, you know, snowstorms. I don't think that this one in, you know, that Juno was engineered. I think it is a result of various climatic changes that we're undergoing at the moment. I won't rule it out, but I know that if you're trying to do it with HAARP technology, that it requires that all the HAARP transmitters on the planet, some Chinese, some Russian, some American, if they're operating still, need to be focused on a single event that you're after to work together. And since our HAARP thing allegedly is not so much active anymore, I don't know whether one down in Guam or in that area is active as well. If the United States is not using its HAARP technology to counter what's being done by the Russians and the Chinese, and we know the Russians and the Chinese are working together, then they may well be able to steer weather where they want it to by increased heating ahead of the storm on one side or the other to cause it to deviate. But they still have to have a storm to move. They won't be creating it. They will be steering what occurs naturally.
Yeah.
And when they steer it, it could be, you know, enhanced by the temperatures in the region they go to.
Very interesting. It just struck me as odd that there are so many things wrong with the storm. And, you know, a lot of people reported on different internet forums a lot of chemtrail spraying days before. And this is, I think, what goes to what you're talking about, the not the creating of the storm, but once they have a storm with the right, you know, set of numbers, they can, you know, do different things to push it in different directions, strengthen it, and such. And I don't know how much of that is weather manipulation versus how much of it is natural, but it just definitely seems so odd. And the naming of the winter storms and the names they give these winter storms, they're like omens or, you know, indicators of some sort.
Yeah. Well,
know,
it certainly fooled
Egyptian
a lot of meteorologists.
Yeah, it
yeah,
did.
The meteorologists were fooled by this, and you know it's because it's an atypical, unnatural, not average type behavior of the storm. And it is interesting that they thought it was going to hit New York, of course, the financial heartbeat of the United States, and I guess of the world for that matter. And maybe there was an attempt to put it right on top of New York. To impact business there and the stock exchange and various other things that might have had ongoing results or effects on the world economy. I'm looking for something to happen to really wound the world economy and further degrade not only the ruble but the U.S. dollar to a point where crisis stations cause panic and rioting all over the place, bank closures. So, you know, if I were trying to use the climate to trigger something like that, it would probably either hit the food production areas of the country or the stock exchange so they couldn't do anything. It hit the power, you know, with the drain on the electricity for heating and transport at that time. So it would make a good target if the enemy were trying to bring us down.
Very interesting. Stan, I got a question from a listener. We talked about the genetically modified mosquitoes yesterday. You got do you have the 411? You got the data on those or the information on those? Did you hear about that? That were released? The mosquitoes
2.5 million, I believe.
Yeah, somewhere.
In the Florida Keys.
Keys, that's right. Florida Keys. Did you hear about that?
No, tell me about that.
Well, apparently, 2.5 million?
Yeah, a British company.
Yeah, go ahead, John.
Got a patent, or is trying to get a patent under a some kind of special bug patent to release 2.5 million mosquitoes in the Florida Keys, genetically modified mosquitoes. That they their hopes of the results of this is to have the mosquitoes released and mate with other mosquitoes, and they will die.
To kill off other mosquitoes, right? Exactly, and the genetically modified mosquitoes are, if I recall correctly here, and let me are actually contain. I'm not sure if that's the right word. E. coli and E. coli for one. Let me just.
Are you saying they're going to have E. coli in these mosquitoes so it would kill the other mosquitoes or something?
That's kind of the long and short of it, yeah. I mean, my terminology might be off, but we're talking about E. coli, and I'm just seeing if I can find that note that I wrote yesterday when I was talking about this. But E. coli and...
You'd think that mosquitoes that bit farm animals on the backside would pick up E. coli as well. I mean, just naturally.
Well, I mean, we're seeing this push toward genetically modified everything, and it's really a bigger part of a bigger agenda of transhumanism and other things. But that just struck me as being evil at its core. I don't know. Can you think of any reason, really, any legitimate reason for something like this?
Well, look, yeah, they're probably trying to getting rid of pests and things that spread other diseases by getting rid of the pests as carriers. I mean, let's face it, mosquitoes are hypodermics that are winged, and whatever they suck up, they can put into somebody else and they bite them. So there's an argument to be made for that, but we know from years of past methods that have been tried without genetic modification even to try to wipe out pests like rabbits in Australia or kangaroos down there or rabbits here that have, a disease during the summer months here that it's not myxomatosis, that's down in Australia, but here, I forget, but it's a tularemia. And so we try to get rid of that that kind of animal. It's a carrier for these things, and in essence try to make genocide on them, which destroys the balance in the ecosystem. The wolves and the coyotes don't have enough rabbits to eat, and so their population dwindles, and you know, it affects the whole ecosystem. And when you do it on a much larger basis of changing the weather and stuff without a clear and correct model of how the entire planet works, electrically, magnetically, thermally, you know, the creator would know that. I'd put my faith in Jesus being in charge of that, but I wouldn't trust me, even with the best advisors and scientists on the planet, to go start messing with the ecosystem without a lot of thought and a lot of computer modeling to hopefully not screw up every other independent or dependent life form, whether it be vegetable or animal. I guess the short way to say what I'm trying to say is I don't feel safe about modifying the ecostructure to such a degree when we're losing all kinds of species every day of insects and animals and stuff like that. We're just not doing it right, and we need help. But you know, I think we've screwed up the planet enough by ourselves at this point that we do have to call out for the architect, the creator, to come back and put it together properly and tell us how to do it right. I look forward to that day.
Amen, brother. Absolutely. Amen. Well, Stan, we've done it again. You've done it again and carried us through another hour of our programming. It was just fantastic. A lot of information. And just a ton of information. Thank you. Man.
Well, I guess, yeah, I was pumped up this week. Feeling a lot better, I must add, health-wise. I was in hospital last week in emergency for some severe pains under my rib, which has been with me for probably 10 years. And, you know, they pumped morphine and Dilaudid and Vicodins into me at the hospital there, and it just took the edge off, but didn't get rid of the extreme pain. I want to tell you, I was close to the 10 mark on the pain calendar. And anyway,
was some kind of inflammation in your lungs,
well,
or something?
No. My doctor, my GP, has been kind of, you know, he's done all the tests you can think of over the last 2 or 3 years. We've been trying to find the cause of this. And, of course, last week it took a bad turn suddenly. And in one day it went from, okay, this is very painful, to holy cow, I can't stand it. And it lasted for maybe 4 hours at the treatment there at the hospital. They did CAT scans and, you know, urine and blood tests and all that, found nothing. They thought it might have been a kidney stone. Well, no. So they sent me home with Holly because they couldn't find anything. And I went to sleep that night. Next morning I got up, and for the first time in 10 years, I was pain-free in that area, totally pain-free. And what we think happened was, in fact, one of your listeners sent me some time back last year a note by email and said, look, for scar tissue, for adhesions, which your doctor says you might be having there from an old operation, take this Cerecor stuff and it'll dissolve the scar tissue and it might separate it from your bone or whatever tissue is being caught by that adhesion. So I did that, and, you know, sure enough, over about 2 months to 3 months of that, it started disappearing scars on my body, so I assume it was doing it inside as well. And I just happened to be sitting in the right position, I think, and as it detached, here, I think it was Thursday last week, it caused my intestinal tract to twist and make what's called an entrapped intestinal loop. And that's what created the pain, because it was the intestines are very painful when you kind of pressure them or cut them or whatever. And the drugs relaxed me, and I laid down, and it flipped back to normal. But the adhesion, the scar tissue, had broken away from whatever it was attached to. And here we are now, 4 days later, I'm still pain-free, except, normal back pains, I can deal with that. But, so to me, it was a blessing. It was a minor miracle. And so that's why you got a lot more news today, because I was feeling a lot better.
Fantastic. Excellent. Brother. Amen. Oh, praise God for that. That's great. Wow. Man.
Well, so indirectly, I think it was due to your show and one of your listeners, I'll look up his name later. But anyway, thank you out there if you're listening for that Cerecor tip. It was really good.
Fantastic. I'm glad you're feeling better. You sound great, and you're looking fabulous. Well,
thank you. How did you do that? Are you spying on me again?
I'm the drunken geospatial agency worker. With the drone flying outside your window, yeah. Anyway.
I waved. I don't know whether you saw that, but...
That wasn't a wave. You put that finger away. No, come on.
You guys.
Stan, you're the
greatest,
man.
You've got to laugh.
Yes, you do. Yes. Well, thank you so much.
You guys, you bet. Thank you, and we'll talk to you next week, if not before. Lord bless you now.
God bless you too, Stan.
See you later. All right. Wow, Stan Dale, what a great guy, man. StanDale.com. Grab his book, Cosmic Conspiracy, and also Holly Dale, Dare to Prepare. We can never. This past Christmas, I gave out a couple of copies of Dare to Prepare as Christmas gifts, and you've got things coming up all the time, birthdays and whatever, anniversaries. This is something I'd be proud to give. Dare to Prepare, as well as Cosmic Conspiracy. Stan Dale from StanDale.com. So glad he joined us tonight. Folks, you're listening to the Hagman Report on this 27th day of January. Can you believe it? January almost over. 1 month down in 2015. We'll be right back after this. Stay with us. Hi, folks. Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Ilana Johnson-Pau. A lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly. Follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
If I were the devil, if I were the devil, if I were the prince of darkness, I'd want to engulf the whole world in darkness. And I'd have a third of its real estate and four-fifths of its population, but I wouldn't be happy until I had seized the ripest apple on the tree, thee. So I'd set about however necessary to take over the United States. I'd subvert the churches first. I'd begin with a campaign of whispers. With the wisdom of a serpent, I would whisper to you as I whispered to Eve. Do as you please. To the young, I would whisper that the Bible is a myth. I would convince them that man created God instead of the other way around. I would confide that what's bad is good and what's good is square. And the old I would teach to pray after me, our Father, which art in Washington. And then I'd get organized. I'd educate authors in How to make lurid literature exciting so that anything else would appear dull and uninteresting. I'd threaten TV with dirtier movies and vice versa. I'd peddle narcotics to whom I could. I'd sell alcohol to ladies and gentlemen of distinction. I'd tranquilize the rest with pills. If I were the devil, I'd soon have families at war with themselves, churches at war with themselves, and nations at war with themselves, until each in its turn was consumed. And with promises of higher ratings, I'd have mesmerizing media fanning the flames. If I were the devil, I would encourage schools to refine young intellects, but neglect to discipline emotions, just let those run wild. Until before you knew it, you'd have to have drug-sniffing dogs and metal detectors at every schoolhouse door. Within a decade, I'd have prisons overflowing. I'd have judges promoting pornography. Soon I could evict God from the courthouse, then from the schoolhouse, and then from the houses of Congress. And in his own churches, I would substitute psychology for religion and deify science. I would lure priests and pastors into misusing boys and girls and church money. If I were the devil, I'd make the symbol of Easter an egg and the symbol of Christmas a bottle. If I were the devil, I'd take from those who have and give to those who wanted until I had killed the incentive of the ambitious. And what'll you bet? I couldn't get whole states to promote gambling as the way to get rich. I would caution against extremes in hard work, in patriotism, in moral conduct. I would convince the young that marriage is old-fashioned, that swinging is more fun, that what you see on TV is the way to be. And thus I could undress you in public, and I could lure you into bed with diseases for which there is no cure. In other words, if I were the devil, I'd just keep right on doing what he's doing.
Paul Harvey. Good day.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our third and final hour on this Tuesday, January 27th edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. We're going to be taking your phone calls this hour and going through some news. If we have time, you can call in at 661-244-9839. That's 661-244-9839. We can get into anything that is on your guys' mind.
No, we can't. We've got an unlisted number. We're not going to give it out. Yeah, folks, don't forget, Rebecca Roth, Thursday, author of Methodical Illusion.
Tomorrow.
Greg Jackson.
And then Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah, we didn't announce this. Saturday to capstone the month of prayer, fasting, and repentance, fasting, and prayer. Steve Quayle and Pastor David Langford, special Saturday show.
That's the 31st.
31st, yes.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is to, again, to close out the month of repentance, fasting, and prayer for the month of January. Steve Quayle and Pastor David Langford. It's going to be an electrified show on Saturday. I can't wait for them to come on. And Pastor Langford, it's been a while. My goodness. Wow. But anyway, and folks, also a reminder, please, if you haven't signed up yet, please do so. We'd love to meet you in Orlando, Florida. We're scheduled to be there March 5th, 6th, and 7th. We'll be presenting there, as well as we're going to be doing some interviews there as well for the DVD series. Honored to do that for them, Prophecy in the News Conference.
We'll be speaking at the conference is Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We'll be speaking on Friday at 10:30 a.m., and then we'll be speaking on Saturday at 8 p.m.
I'm going to be tuned up Saturday. I guarantee it.
Yeah. Hmm. So those two are the times we're speaking, and you'll see that on the live stream. But the interviews won't be seen on the live stream. What we're doing is something Derek Gilbert was I don't want to say in charge. He was doing these interviews in the past. And he's not able to do them this time. So we're going to be conducting interviews with the presenters off air that will be part of the DVD. And from what I gathered...
Jerry, of course, is going to be there, and Russ is. I mean, just a ton of great people. So but please put that on your calendar. And if you can, please try to make that. You're going to learn so much from these people. And there's an electrifying spirit of fellowship when you do go to these conferences and meet you face-to-face.
Russ Berut will be there. He is a guest on our show last year.
Briault.
I'm sorry. Jonathan Kahn, he'll be on our show on February 19th. That Bob Cornuk, who was on last week, he'll be on. Russ Dizdar, Joseph Ferrer will be there. We'll be there. You have Chris Putnam, Paul McGuire, Jerome Corsi, as you said, Bill Salas, Doc Marquis, and a bunch of other people who are listed on prophecyinthenews.com. If you go to our website on the right-hand side, you can see the Prophecy in the News graphic. Click on that to get all the information, the schedules, and the registration if you're going to go. And definitely, if you can't go, try to get the live stream if that's something that...
Well, didn't you say it was going to be on DirecTV, too? Or
yeah. On the website of Prophecy in the News, they have a section here where it talks about the full TV schedule, DirecTV, Dish Network, Church Channel, and Sky Angel.
Well, I want my Screen Actors Guild... what is that? The Screen Actors Guild, not only the card, but the... The
credentials?
No. I just want the. Isn't it a per diem when you appear on television? I don't know. Yeah, whatever.
But
just kidding. I'm just really. Yeah. Okay.
No, that was funny.
Yeah, sure it was. The White House drone. You heard, folks, or perhaps you haven't. A quadrupeller. What I don't know. It's a. Did you hear about that quad? Copter, the 2x2.
Oh yeah, the crash in the White House.
Well, come to find out, it was a White House, or well, it was a
government employee.
Yeah, drunk the night before.
Oh, I didn't hear that part. Yeah. I know the drone. It was actually a remote control helicopter, if I remember reading it properly. It was one of the top 10 selling toys on Amazon.
Wow, I gotta get me one of them. I mean, really, guys. I mean, seriously, you're gonna play with.
I didn't read up on this too much, but the drone or helicopter, whatever, was flying in the airspace around the White House, obviously, and it crashed on the lawn.
Yeah, the geospatial agency worker, he gets tooted up, you know, as some probably Apple teenies, okay, and takes his neighbor's quadcopter. And
it wasn't his. That's good.
Yeah, and again, he's tuned up, and he's out there, you know, and it crashes on the White House lawn, and the guy says, "Gee, I hope it didn't crash on the White House lawn." And he goes to bed, and then the next morning he wakes up and hears it on the news, and says, "Ah, man, you know, maybe I should call the Secret Service maybe I should call my employer." And he did, and then he called the Secret Service, and immediately.
Did he lose his job?
No. He got cited for flying a drone while impaired. It's new in the criminal code section. Okay, you're not allowed to fly a drone while you're impaired. I'm kidding, folks. Kidding around. Okay. Again, the joke didn't land, but the drone did. Okay. All right. Sometimes you just gotta kind of be a little bit.
That was good.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate that.
We're going to go to the phones. We're going to go to area code 315 first. We're coming to you now. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Yeah. Hello, gentlemen. I'm in central New York, about 35 miles from Cooperstown Baseball Hall of Fame, and didn't have any bad weather here. And I'm glad things didn't turn out bad for New York City. Couple pieces of trivia. I think, do you know, Joe, when it was the Jonestown Massacre down in Guyana? Maybe the mid-70s, was it?
I remember that. It was 1979.
Was it?
Yep.
Well, I know a friend down in Florida. He's passed away now, Mick Oxley. And I went down and stayed with them. And he was very good friends with Sir Lionel LeCou, who was very good friends with the Queen of England. And Sir Lionel Lecoux was a world-class attorney. Well, Jim Jones wanted Sir Lionel to be his attorney. And
excuse me one second. Let me correct that. It was November 18th, 1978. I apologize. I was going from memory. But go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, Jim Jones wanted to hire Sir Lionel Lecoux, and they're both passed away now. And his wife, McOxley's wife, Petty, has passed away also. But Jim Jones wanted to hire Sir Lionel Lecoux as his attorney. And at any price, and he suggested to him $50,000 a day or whatever you want, I'll pay it. Well, Sir Lionel Lecoux had recently, about 2 weeks before that, became a Christian, and he would not take the case. So as everybody has heard, I think it was something like 900 met their death through Kool-Aid, remember?
That's right. Yeah, 900
Kool-Aid.
No, pardon me?
It wasn't Kool-Aid?
They were put to sleep with Kool-Aid. But everyone was shot in the head with a .22. We'll never hear that again, and whether somebody believes it or not doesn't bother me. But that's what Mick told me, that Sir Lionel Lecoux told him. Yeah, they were all shot in the head with a .22. the other thing, the Storm Sandy that did a lot of damage a few years back, and the units that do the HAARP project that heat up the atmosphere, they're made in Sarasota, Florida, by Honeywell Corporation.
Okay.
So I thought I'd just pass that on.
That's interesting.
And,
okay, you know, interesting. Wow. Okay. Let's step back to the Jonestown for a second here, because you said that with pretty good authority. The official narrative here, the official story, the official account is that the people who drank the Kool-Aid, venue or avenue of delivery, was from cyanide. But you're saying that they were shot with a .22.
They were all shot in that with a .22. So
why? Why? Okay. That why?
I can't tell you that. I don't know.
Okay.
It's just the facts that Mick told me, that Sir Lionel Lecoux told him, and you can up. I don't know how to spell Lecoux. Sir Lionel Lecoux. He was friends with the Queen. I seen his picture with the Queen even, and Mick was very good friends with him. Had his picture taken with his friend Mick, with his friend Sir Lionel. So it was a long time ago. I'm 73, so. I mean,
well, I remember watching it.
Just happened to think of it tonight.
Pardon me?
I just happened to think of that tonight. I thought I'd pass it on.
Well, you know, so I think
knowledge.
I do believe that the I've looked into Jonestown on a limited basis some time ago, and I think Alex Jones might have done some research on it as well, where there were connections, I think, to the the CIA. I could be wrong, and perhaps even British intelligence. I'm not certain, but there's something pretty significant there. The intent.
I have no idea
about
that. Well, incidentally,
okay.
Storm Sandy, definitely. When was that, Storm Sandy?
Fall of 2012.
Was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that definitely was a HAARP project, and it took a right-hand turn and went out to sea, and it caused damage. They had to cause damage, because if it didn't cause damage, it would have looked funny. Of course, I'm glad this last one didn't. So it's a weather war weapon, and that's what that's all about. And I don't have a computer, so I wouldn't have got that from the internet or nothing. So that's
wow.
It from this end.
Okay. Well, thanks for the information. Appreciate that. Interesting bits of trivia. Wow. Okay. Well, God bless you, my friend. Thank you.
Have a good night. Thanks for the call.
All right. Yeah, Hurricane Sandy did affect the...
Was it September? I think it was September, October 2012. that came in. And a lot, I mean, as I said yesterday, that storm yesterday had some similarities to that first storm, Sandy. But yeah, the damage was horrific from Sandy.
Well, don't forget the bearer bonds that were lost reportedly, billions in bearer bonds. Really, biggest mystery on Wall Street, mystery in quotes, Hurricane Sandy, their floodwaters inundated a 10,000 square foot underground vault downtown, soaking 1.3 million bond and stock certificates, including bearer bonds. Obviously, a bearer bond is like a dollar bill, or it's like cash. And then, of course, after the bonds were dried out, it's at 55 Water Street. But after they were dried out, don't forget, there's a fire. And, of course, the vault owner, the Deposit Trust and Clearing Corporation, DTCC. Don't forget the role that DTCC plays in all of our lives. All right? So, anyway, interesting. And I would say that Sandy could have been manipulated, or at least exploited to the effect.
That hook it took into the United States, never seen that before, aside from hurricanes that are coming down from the Atlantic to the Caribbean into the Gulf where they hook back up and around, but not up on the East Coast like that. We're going to go to area code 413. 413, you're coming up next. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
Good. Save me. Save me. Hurry up. Save me.
You are saved. I have no power to save. Sorry. That's Jesus.
No, bail me out. How's that? Bail me out of this.
Okay.
All right.
What? Quandary?
Well,
he just doesn't have
Quagmire? I don't know.
I don't know.
Yeah,
I,
you
I
can't help her. He just needs a nap. What's on your mind?
Oh, so a lullaby then.
That might help.
Yeah? Okay, a couple things actually. One, you were talking about the storm and, you know, like what is this supposed to do? Or you were talking earlier about that and what is, whose chain are they trying to pull basically? And you were talking about some sort of disaster is going to come, and they're going to use that as a PR piece, shall we say, for FEMA camps, right? Hey, everybody, head to the FEMA camps. They're a place of refuge, and head there. I know you and the listeners, a lot of them will be familiar with Pastor Paul Begley.
Oh, yeah.
He did a video today that had me screaming in my own mind, like, oh, my gosh, they're getting ready to pull something as a PR piece for FEMA camps, just like you were talking about earlier today.
Wow.
Yeah, and sorry, I forget where exactly. If you want to watch the video, go to Paul Begley channel on YouTube and look for today. And the image of the video is a sign that was put up by, like, town council outside some town in Idaho I honestly forget where, sorry. But
he's from Indiana. Was that it?
Maybe.
Okay.
Anyway, point being, the city council was ordered to put up a sign that says something to the effect of, it's coming, how are you prepared? And, you know, they were told by FEMA, like, put this up and leave it up and don't talk about it. Town also happens to be next to a nuclear power plant. So, you know, make of that what you will. But I thought, hey, sounds like someone's getting ready to make a good PR piece for FEMA camps.
Interesting.
Yeah, I agree with you. They will make those, as you said, places of refuge, just like they will make this RFID technology and the, you know, beast technology that we're seeing in transhumanism, an escape also from, you know, wounds,
oh, right,
healing, you know, mental and physical, and, you know.
Yeah, immortality without God.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Not possible,
yeah,
but
you can keep that.
They hope it is.
you know, go for it. You know, best of luck to you. I choose not that. The other thing is just you're talking earlier about the with the rise of this Chrislam movement. Obviously, Jesus and Allah are not the same God. So what about Christians and Jews? I mean, Orthodox Jews. Do we pray to the same God?
Oh, that's the question. That's the question. Again, if you missed the beginning of the program, caller, if you missed the beginning of the program or early on, I was talking to Steve Quayle about that. And the Jews who do not recognize Jesus Christ as our Lord and Savior, obviously we do not pray to the same God. So to say that Jews and Christians pray to the same God, although it sounds very trivial, it's very significant, okay? So those Jews who do not recognize Jesus as the Lord and Savior, arguably it can be stated that they do, that Christians and Jews don't pray to the same God. So having said that, now that...
And Greg Jackson is a Messianic believer, and he will be on with us tomorrow, so we can get into some of this with him. He'll have a better idea and understanding than we do.
And I can guarantee you, from just what I said to you, caller, and earlier, I can guarantee you, I'm going to be called an anti-Semitic.
I'm
not. You know.
Right. So. No, I don't. I wouldn't say that. But let me ask you a question. For those people who think that Christians and Jews do not pray to the same God, let me ask you a question. To whom was Jesus praying?
Is this a trick question? I mean, he was praying
to God the Father.
Right. But, okay, the separation occurs. It's my understanding the separation occurs. Now, to answer that question, you got to understand, it's my understanding that there's Talmudic Jews and Jews who follow the Torah. And I'm going to defer this to both Pastor Langford and Greg Jackson, but the Kabbalah, okay, there's a difference there, a huge difference. So when you talk about Jesus Christ, obviously he's praying to the one and only true God, period. But when you get into the Talmud versus the Torah, there's a huge difference.
Oh, sure.
Right. Go ahead, caller.
It's certainly true that, there are differences, and I believe that there are a lot of, like the Pharisees in Jesus' day, they trust in the law to save them. That was never the intent. The intent was that, God was going to save them all along. I do stand that Orthodox Jews, what God set out in the beginning, they do pray to the same God. However, the Orthodox Jewry of today, not counting Messianic Jews, because they do pray to Jesus, do pray to the same God, but their folly is that they do not recognize Jesus as the Messiah. Jesus said himself, I come in the name of my Father, and you don't accept me, but another will come in his own name, and him you will accept. So my understanding is that the Antichrist is going to show up and say, I'm the Messiah you've been waiting for, and a lot of them are going to follow him.
Right, and this is where you get into the discussion about the synagogue of Satan.
Sure, and...
Yeah.
It's a very complicated subject, but just I think at its core root, if you went back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob and said, who are you praying to, you'd come up with the same answer. They were looking forward to Jesus. We look back to Jesus. The Orthodox Jews of today don't recognize Jesus as the Messiah, and that's obviously a big problem. But, they do pray to the same God that Jesus prayed to.
All right. You know, yeah, look, this is out of my area of expertise. I mean, I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. I am not intellectually armed or capable to even have this discussion. I'm really not, you know, which is why I defer to people who are experts like, you know, Pastor David Langford, for example. Those people who understand, and even Steve Quayle, who understand the Talmud and understand the Torah. And, you know, as a matter of fact, even Ted Brewer from healthmasters.com, Ted Brewer has an extensive knowledge about all of this. And we were talking about it. But there's a difference here. And it's not something that I personally I feel well-armed enough. It'd be like me trying to talk you through a car repair. Ain't going to happen. You're gonna end up with a that's why I would take my car to the shop because or you know I had to tell you to take your car to the shop because they know what they're doing and if they can fix a car then you know so that's something that
right.
Deep discussion and I think it's worthy discussion. I think intellectual discourse of this type is important so we know so we're not fooled, right? I mean that's the ultimate
absolutely.
You know ultimate objective and right. If we believe go ahead.
I completely agree with that. But just when you posed the question earlier, the danger of that came to my mind is that thinking that Jews and Christians are different could lead to anti-Semitism within the church.
I'll stipulate to that, except, I mean, if... Maybe more clarity was needed for that statement. However, I think I provided ample background for that statement, but nonetheless, it is such that any intellectual and rational thinking person would understand, hopefully understand, the difference between someone who follows the Torah versus someone who follows the Talmud or the Kabbalah, different areas, you know, and I'm not going to continue this conversation only because, I mean, not to slight you, but it just we're coming full circle back to where we started. I'm going to leave this to the experts, again, like Pastor Langford and others who really understand this issue. But in no way was it meant to be anti-Semitic. Of course not. Of
right.
course
no,
not.
No, I didn't want people to walk away thinking like, oh, you know, we should hate the Jews. No, I don't.
Oh no.
We shouldn't
no.
hate anybody. No. 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 No.
And I'm always amazed at how that evolves. Just you know, and this is not involving you, but I'm always amazed at how that evolves. You could, for example, you mentioned Mossad having for you know perhaps even being complicit in this rogue intelligence, Western intelligence type of operation. Man, oh God, you can't say that. You get slapped down and anti-Semite, you Israel hater and. Okay, you know, it's just amazing how these things just go flying off. People just, they seem to hear what they want to hear, and then they make accusations, but
yeah.
unfounded.
Yep. That,
so,
yeah.
But, and you're right. I guess you
okay,
made your point, didn't you? You made your point.
Well, I hope so. I'm sure you'll see. The good news is you get all the hate mail.
That's right.
So I don't have to worry about it. That's great.
Well, you know, all we try to do is speak the truth and enlighten people, inform people, educate people. This is not a divisive, especially, look, the Jews, this is not about, I mean, this is not to be divisive at all, not to be, because those of us
right.
who do worship the same God, we are all in this together against the Satanists, the Islamic agenda. So, all right, brother. Well, thank you, man. Made a great
hey,
point.
God bless you guys. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thanks, bud.
God bless you, too. Have a good night.
Yeah.
All right.
Interesting. Interesting how that evolved, and I have to say that I'm not an expert. You know, it's, well, you know what? It's interesting how many people, for example, when we do investigate, like if I'm doing a forensic investigation on, we'll say, blood spatter analysis, and somebody says, well, I'm gonna, they've got no idea what they're doing. That's kind of like me coming into that argument. I just don't know enough. So you call in people who do know and can explain it and articulate it very well. And I'll tell you this, Ted Brewer is extremely articulate in that venue and to hear him explain it. But he also said during our phone conversation, he also said, look, you know, you start talking about this, man, it's you're going to get accused of being an anti-Semite and anti-Semitic and anti-Israel and a Jew hater. And it's, but there is, but by people who are oftentimes don't have any direct skin in the game, so to speak. Go ahead.
All right, let's go to another caller. We're going to go to area code 334. Coming to you now. You're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Yeah, hey, what's going on, Joe?
Good, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, man. I just had some information I wanted to run by you guys, but I know how you are about not really wanting to go with people who you don't, if you don't have a source that you know. But I have close friends that are in Secret Service.
All right.
And they know other people, but I wanted to hit on a date coming up that I've been hearing a lot about, and it's got to do with the past, too. This date does, April 19th. I mean, do y'all know, does that ring a bell with y'all?
Sure.
The Patriot Community, April 19th.
Sure. Yes, that's always a very cult date. Yes, April 19th. What do you hear was going to happen?
It was truly Patriot's Day, but, you know, Waco and then Oklahoma City, you know, that whole fraud happened. I call it a fraud. I mean, most of the people know what really happened with that, but from what people are telling me and from what I'm hearing from the people I know who have some upper clearances is that they're looking to case a certain group of people in this country, the gun owners, the people who, type listeners to these shows, your Alex Jones listeners, your people like that know what's going on. It's going to be a stereotype, and it's they're calling for a false flag. That's what's been going around from what I've been hearing from these sources that I talked to.
So just to be clear on this, caller, just to be clear, you're saying that from your sources, including but not limited to Secret Service people, April 19th, false flag to blame the Patriots. Is that what you're saying, to blame the conservatives, the us?
Yes.
Okay.
That's when they are looking to, this year, to speed things up in a hurry, and that is, the militarization of the police and all that. Now they're turning the people against the police, if you notice that. It's kind of like the brown shirt thing that happened in Germany. You got a lot of cops out there who are scared now and everything, and there's all kinds of talk going on. It's not just in the agencies. It's all the way down to local law enforcement. There's people that know what they've got planned to blame Patriots for what's going to happen in this country, probably this year. And they look to use a lot of the other dynamics from what I'm hearing. But that's just, you know, you can take it for what it is. I know I'm just a guy calling in, but, I mean, the person I know is family, and they were in the Secret Service for many, many years, and they have friends that are still in now, and there's a lot of people who are scared to death about this year, and because they know that the hammer is coming down. From what I'm hearing, it's got me scared to death, because, and I've kind of felt it anyway. A lot of guys in that area are saying we're not going to see another election. You know, that type thing. And I can't verify it. I mean, I can't verify it. You know, I can't. You know, but I wanted to. I'm wary of that date. And I've also heard other people tell me that date may have some significance this year, and that's all I wanted to get across was that date.
Interesting. Well, so noted. I mean, it's very vague. However, specific regarding the date, vague regarding the exact nature of the false flag, or if there is one. But, you know, hey, it can happen. I mean, things can happen. Go ahead.
They want to shift the people that don't, you know, the everyday person that just goes about their business, that type person. They want to shift gun owners into, and people like that, constitutionalists, into, and I know you guys know this anyway, but shift it more into the those people being terrorists.
Oh, sure.
You know, us being terrorists. And a lot of us have been hearing that that's coming soon, and it's coming fast.
I believe that. I believe it's going to happen sooner rather than later, probably in our lifetime, probably within the very near term. Yeah, it's got to happen for them to accomplish their goals. First thing in society, what tyrants do is disarm the population. They've got to disarm us, number one. And in order to do that, they've got really the only really way is to get public opinion on their side is to create such a horrific event, perhaps involving guns, that there will be an outcry that, hey, you can't have guns. I shudder to think what that event could be.
And that's what horrifies me, because if you remember Timothy McVeigh, I believe Timothy McVeigh and Terry Nichols, they didn't have a dime between each other, just like William Cooper said before they assassinated him, you know, for saying 9/11 was going to happen. He called it just like it was, you know, Bin Laden. There was no way those guys paid Bin Laden to help them. And it'll probably come about like something like that. You've got these homegrown guys from Georgia or, you know, Texas or someone like that, and they got help from, what's the new guy's name of, you know, ISIS. It could be something like that, you know. It would be like these guys, but it's going to have to top 9/11. And that's what scares me, you know.
That's what we started the show. Yep. Yep, you're right.
I will never forget that day. And I try to tell my nephew, he's 21. He's 19 now, and he vaguely remembers it. But for the people who remember that day, it was just, nothing has ever been the same. And
for something to top that,
and they haven't succeeded in getting the guns out of the hands of American people. And I shudder also to think of what it's going to be when they pull it off. I mean, God forbid they nuke the city or, you know, but I think they would do that. There's no doubt in my mind they would go that far to do that.
Oh, caller, the people who we're dealing with are, for them to promote the murder, and I say murder, of 50 million unborn children, for them not to think twice about using nukes and Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that's the same mindset, by the way, that's still in power. And for them to be able to kill 4,000 people or however many thousand people actually died on 9/11 or as a result of 9/11, for them to bomb cities in Afghanistan and Iraq, and they don't care. I mean, these people are true evil. And see, here's the thing, folks in caller, I don't believe that the average person in the West, and specifically in America, understands the true depravity, the true evil of these people. I mean, I don't think I don't even think I understand the true nature. I mean, we're talking evil incarnate. Yeah. I mean, it's just incredible.
Unless you people like George Soros, who in a quote said, you know, the greatest time of my life was when I was 14, you know, taking Jews stuff that were, you know, confiscating Jews material with my father in Germany. You know, that was the happiest time of his life, you know. And he's sitting in a house in California, one of the richest people that run half of the things that go on, you know, and he's just, to me, he's a war criminal. you know, and it's that type of evil that that people don't. I don't know how more a percentage has woken up than I thought would, but it's still not enough. There's still not enough people waking up. There's still a ways to go, and I just hope it's not too late when everybody finally gets that light bulb to go off.
And amen, brother.
I think when if something like that happens and everybody's light bulb goes off at the same and everybody sees who the real enemy is at the same time, they ain't going to stand a chance. And that's the one thing I have that I keep in mind to stay positive, because it is depressing, man. It is depressing. I mean, it gets to you. It really does. It gets to you. But
I know, man. I think you live it every day.
There is going to be something to happen to where I believe the majority is going to see it for what it is. And when everybody does, pardon my language, people are going to be pissed when they, you know what I mean? They're going to be angry.
Oh, yeah.
And that's when I think change is going to hopefully happen, you know. But I want to give some other people time, man. I just wanted to run that
all
stuff
right,
by y'all
thank
about
you.
The April 19th thing. And y'all
we'll
have a great night, man.
All right, we'll keep an eye out for April 19th.
Thanks for the call.
And that's something we're going to be talking about on Thursday. You know, Joe, if people still look at it today, and it's interesting because enough time has elapsed from 9/11 and enough investigation, independent investigation has gone on where people should realize 9/11 did not happen the way they said it happened. It just
no, Thursday we'll hear more about this
yes,
from a different perspective.
Yes.
But
go ahead.
No, it didn't in so many different ways. I mean, we... I don't want to go through point by point because you tend to leave important stuff out, but there is just so much just on the outside of the actual events of 9/11, from the administration's actions to the before and after, the you know.
Yeah.
There is so much that was going on 9/11, so many mistakes they made.
But try to talk to somebody today about that, somebody who was not awake then, is not awake now, and say, look, I've got proof right here, right now. Proof, or at least
well,
circumstance, or enough
well, that's
evidence.
The thing.
Or,
if you can't, if you have the proof and the facts, undisputably, and the people still deny it,
yeah,
what can you do?
Well, knock them outside the head. I mean, yeah,
maybe.
You know? It's like, come on, look at this. Because in order for you to understand what's going on right now, at least to some extent, if depending on where you're at in your awakening process, you got to know where you got to know what happened back then. And even if you really want to get good, you got to go back in time and understand how everything fits together. And then you'll see the trajectory. You can paint the trajectory that we're on. And of course, that's how we can not predict, but project into the future. That's why it's important.
Absolutely. We're going to go to our next caller. We're going to go to area code 786. 786, you are live on the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Good evening, Doug and Joe. How are you guys doing today?
Very well.
Fantastic. Praise God and God bless you guys for what you do. You provide such a great service for the remnant out there in this world, and you guys are going to be highly rewarded in heaven for what you guys are doing, and I just want to personally thank you and everybody. I know you guys are humble, so I know y'all don't want to just be thanked all the time, but thank you very much for what you guys do. If you guys, hopefully one of you guys got a pen and paper, I'm going to go over a couple things real quick. Hopefully I can get in for Blog Talk knocks us off.
Go ahead.
First of all, I just got a few points. Jonestown, the caller that called about the Jonestown, everybody was not shot by a 22, but even back then when the mainstream media was and mainstream news still had a little bit of a kernel of truth left in them, it was reported that there were members that were shot by 22s. Of course, there was the gun battle that killed the senator at the airport, at that little airstrip. And so firearms were used, and they were 22, if I remember right. So that, what he was saying was right, is that a good number of members were killed with a 22, and that was reported mainstream news, but a lot of them were also poisoned. So it was kind of a mix of that. The other thing about the Kabbalah, and I could go all day about that, but and you're going to have some other people on, I understand, this week that's going to talk about that. But the thing is I'm glad that you are making the distinction. Jesus called, there was a lot of reasons. Of course, the main reason why Jesus was put on the cross was it was his Father's will to redeem us. So that, above all, that was a spiritual thing. The actual physical on the ground was that he was challenged. He was a challenge, and he was to the synagogue. He called them a den of vipers, a synagogue of Satan. They were practicing Kabbalah at that time and just using a covering of the Torah to keep the people in line. And, you know, just like Satan always does, it's mixing truth with a lie. What bothers me is that I'm all for the Jewish people because they are the apple of God's eye. But what's running Israel everything's always gray. There's never black and white. So there's good people in the Israeli government, don't get me wrong. But they are flying the banner of the Antichrist with the that Star of David is not Star of David. We all know that. It's Seal of Solomon. It's one of the highest symbols of the mystery religion. It's heaven coming down and man reaching up to heaven and heaven coming down reaching to man. And so it's a representation of the God-man, which we all know was Jesus. He was God incarnate in the flesh. And so as what Satan always does, he perverts everything. Of course, we all have read or seen videos that the Seal of Solomon was given by, some say, right out from demons. You know, that seal was to control demons, that Solomon controlled demons. It could have come from some of the people, some of the women that he married that were into the occult religions around him. But, you know, the Jewish people, unfortunately, picked up a lot of bad luggage when they were in captivity, both in Babylon and Egypt, and that got incorporated, and like Satan always does, he corrupted it. So that's what's going on, and this whole Zionist movement is a cult thing, and it's another way of political correctness that you can't criticize Israel. You know, you got Hagee and all these, and the neocons, they really hammer I love people that I disagree with all the time. So I can disagree with something with the Israeli people not being anti-Semite, and you don't need to put up with any of that, Doug and Joe, people trying to accuse you of being anti-Semite. In fact, you know, God himself, you know, called the Jewish people a stiff-necked people. He chose the Jewish people because they were one of the rougher crowds to actually – so he chose – one of the lowest and one of the roughest groups of people to make his people, and they are. And so this whole Zionist movement is just to try to keep people in line and try to keep Christians in line this way. But we should always support the Jewish people, and the ones that practice out of the Torah are of God. But the ones that are practicing Kabbalah and reading out the Zohar and the Talmud, they're not. I mean, they're really not. And so I appreciate that you made that distinction. I just want to throw my 2 cents worth in on that.
Well, thank you.
The other thing that I really want to talk about was that our time is very short. And I hear people out there when they call, and I sometimes see in the chat room, you know, and I hear on the Alex Jones show that if we could just convince enough people, we've got to realize in the Bible that when Jesus was here on earth performing miracles, he only got a remnant. Only a few people out of the many listened and heard it. We've got to realize that most people do not want to hear the truth. The Bible says many times that people are not going to hear the truth. We continue, and what's going to happen is the watchmen like you and all of us out here who are witnessing, we're a witness right now for people to try to get the truth to them and, of course, get the gospel to them. But if they don't hear it and they refuse it, then at the Great White Throne Judgment, we become a witness against them. Because when God pulls a person up that didn't ask for to be saved, they're gonna try to say, "I didn't know, I didn't know." And one of us that may have witnessed to them God's going to say, I sent him, and we're going to have to testify against that person that we tried to wake up or we tried to share the gospel with. And that's what people don't understand. And Jesus said multiple times that they were like with the Pharisees and them, they didn't have ears to hear or eyes to see. And Jesus did not. We got plenty of examples where people came up, like the rich man, and he said, "Get rid of all your stuff and follow me." And the rich man couldn't do it. And so Jesus went on. He didn't go chasing after that rich guy, saying, "Come on, you got to join me." He left him and moved on to greener pastures, to a new field to try to reap. And we all got to understand that this, we are going to be a remnant. The Christians and the Jews are going to be a remnant, and it's going to be a minority. And what we need to start targeting, since we're in the very last days before, it's going to be hard to witness to anybody, we're going to be busy trying to stay alive, is we need to become better at discerning who out there is a viable candidate to actually get the truth. Now we can
absolutely
we need to
cut you off. We got about 5 seconds. You made a number of great points. I want to thank you so much. God
Thanks
bless you. Call. We're at the end of the program. Sorry, buddy. Folks, that'll do it for us tonight.
Tomorrow, Greg Jackson will be live with us, 8 p.m. here for the whole show. Until then, stay safe, God bless, and have a great evening.